You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins, the Director of Leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources. Today, we're asking 5 leadership questions of Brad Lominick. Brad headed up the Catalyst Movement for more than 10 years. He's now a consultant for various ministries and businesses. He's a really good dancer, as you can't see right now. And he serves on the Advisory Council for Ministry Grid, our church leader training platform here at Lifeway. And we are excited to have Brad on because he's tons of fun.
It's great to be here, Barnabas.
And Todd.
Thank you.
And can I just say that Todd is highly medicated.
I am.
On several painkillers because he's got a bad back.
I was going to say, at least it's for a reason. It's not just for the sake of taking pills.
But yeah. He's a gamer. I mean, you're playing injured today.
That's right.
I am.
He rubbed some dirt on it.
Pain.
Yeah.
He taped it up and he's back in the game.
Yeah. Yep. I appreciate that about you.
All kinds of excuses as well to pretty much say whatever I want to, so.
And Barnabas is such a good reader slash setter-upper of the Five Questions
That's
podcast.
Right. I can read sentences left to right, top
very
to bottom.
Strong, very strong. And you have a good radio voice.
Thank you. I put it on sometimes.
I have a face made for radio, so that's where I jump in and really contribute well to these kinds of conversations.
Well, it's about time we get into our first question then.
Before this goes further off the tracks.
Who are you learning from? Not in this room.
That was not a good segue.
The assumption would be that both of you I'm learning from. You know, I've got a list of a lot of people. For my leadership and my journey, the big picture is I learn from everyone. And that's a statement that a lot of people will say. And you're like, what does that really mean when you learn from everyone? But I do feel like that I can take from lots of different voices. And so for me, that would be everyone from a Pete Cashmore of Mashable, who is, you know, putting together one of the largest tech blogs in the world, all the way down to a 25-year-old church planner that I just had a lunch with last week. So that's a big, broad perspective, and I'm not being specific to the question, but I just want to paint that picture because a lot of times, I think as Christian leaders, we tend to overemphasize individuals and we underemphasize this general landscape of being able to pull from lots of different perspectives and take in things that we can be helpful. Specifically right now, from a leadership background, Simon Sinek is really somebody that I'm paying a lot of attention to, who wrote Leaders Eat Last and the book Start With Why that was sort of the TED Talk sensation. That's been a big one. I've spent a lot of time with, or as much time as you can with your pastor, with Louis Giglio. And a lot of people will know Louis and who Louis is. But in terms of somebody speaking spiritual life into me and discipleship and shepherding me both from a pastoral perspective as well as listening to his sermons, I mean, the guy's on fire recently.
Yeah.
I think he is probably at his height, at least from my world of watching him be able to really speak and teach and preach. So those would be two, and those are, I bet you've never had those two answers woven together.
No.
Simon Sinek and Louis Giglio.
Can you do an impression of both of them? No, you don't have to do it.
Simon's hard. I
feel like most people wouldn't know. I mean, there are people who heard the TED Talk, but most people don't know what Simon Sinek sounds like. I feel like most people just know him by his books.
Yeah.
Which makes it harder to do an impression.
I always say a great way to find out if somebody is a good leader or not is if their team can do a decent impression of
them. That's true. And if you'll actually allow your team to do a decent impression of you. And not get frustrated or angered.
Yeah, feel like you're being undermined or something.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry. Todd's team can all do an impression of Todd.
Barnabas, can you do an impression of Todd right here on the spot?
Well, Todd has more catchphrases than anything, so it's less about mannerisms and more just about things like always saying at the end of the day or knowing that he's going to come out of certain meetings and he's going to come in and say, all right, we're changing everything.
Yeah.
You know,
there's certain phrases that he's going to always go.
There's certain responses, certain phrases. It's just, it's sort of a, you can gauge his rhythms. You go, here it comes. But back to the serious question. You mentioned earlier that people in the Christian leadership space often focus too much on individuals. Do you think that lends itself to tribalism? You know, some of the divisions in the church, because sort of the I follow Paul, I follow Apollos kind of thing, to take it back a couple thousand years. Is that kind of what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think a little bit that would be true. And there's two sides of that. One side is that you want to make sure that those who are speaking into your life are coming from a perspective of sound doctrine, of sound theology, that you're not allowing all these different types of voices just to muddle up the message that's being put into you. Mm-hmm. So I say that with a lot of assumptions, in a sense that somebody's mature enough to listen to lots of different people. And the less mature you are, the more focused you should be on listening to a few.
Getting your foundation.
Exactly. The more mature you become, I think, in your walk with Christ, that the broader you can expand your horizons of who you're listening to.
Because your discernment increases and you can sort through which pieces of what people are saying are worth absorbing and holding on to.
Exactly. So that's the lens that I'm walking through. But to answer your question, yes, I do think there's a lot of the Christian community that gets fixated on one voice for one tribe and for one perspective. Mm-hmm. And then anybody outside of that is seen as either the wrong answer or simply, I won't listen to anything they have to say.
Right. It's like guilt by association. Anything associated with that person just must be false.
Exactly. I think a lot of that is based on many times that your people now are so built into voices, even that they don't that aren't pastoring them, because of podcasts and because of conferences and other ways we can consume content. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, I'll ask the question, "Hey, who's pastoring you?" And their answer for pastors many times is other pastors they've never met, but they're listening to their sermons online. They're listening to them by podcast.
Is that a good thing?
I don't know. I'm not sure if it is or not.
I think the jury's out, because I think most pastors do that. I mean, it's okay as long as you're not, you know, getting your Sunday sermon from last Sunday sermon.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to say I'm learning from those people via podcast or whatever. It's another thing to say they're pastoring me, because one of those things is an information exchange, and the other one is a relational thing, and you can't have a relationship with a podcast. Thank you for listening, by the way, but you can't have a relationship with this podcast or any other one.
Well, no, I think that's a really good point, and it's also something that is both a good and a bad. I think it's a neutral, just like technology is, mm-hmm. and as long as you're using it effectively for the consumption of content or the growing of your faith or the broadening of your perspective in terms of your leadership journey, those are all healthy. It probably comes back to, are you receiving accountability?
Right.
Is there any sort of reciprocal exchange between you and a podcast that you're listening to?
Well, obviously and that, not. And that unique application where somebody can say, I see this in your life, and either you need to change it or you need to emphasize it, but you can't get that from a podcast. God can do amazing things through all sorts of information, but that's not the same as being pastored or shepherded.
Yeah, but how many pastors, even if, you know, they never listen to a podcast or they may answer that question differently, truly have people around them that do that? I mean,
far too few, I'm pretty sure, is the answer.
In their life that they can trust.
If you've been a pastor at a church for 20 plus years, in a lot of situations at least, that, I mean, I haven't been a pastor for 20 some years. I've been in a couple churches where they are. And, you know, unless those guys unless they seek it out, it's not going to happen naturally.
People don't seek them out.
And even when they have those people in their lives, you know, they have to be really careful to make sure that they're not just yes men.
Yeah. Well, I think even take it broader than the church to just the organizational level, so you're talking less about the pastoral and more just the leadership. The higher you go in status, in authority, the more you lose that unless you invite people into it. Like you said, you have to seek it out, because once you're the CEO, people don't come to you and say, you need to do this differently.
Well, you have to,
until the board votes you out.
You have to value it.
One practical thing I would just add to this question, or the answer to your question of who you're learning from, is as leaders, you should always be learning from everyone around you. And today, you can learn as much from a 23-year-old on your team as Absolutely. You can somebody who's wiser and older, because that 23-year-old has more knowledge and the ability to find something online quick and actually help you learn. So if you're in that stage where you're still thinking, well, I have to be learning from somebody older and wiser, then you need to stop in your tracks right now and make sure that you're expanding that, because the younger leaders on your team can teach you just as much as the older leaders can.
Absolutely. I think the biggest key to being successful in leadership in the future is being a learner. You know, there's always been a connection between being a learner and being a leader. But in the day and age that we are entering, from a leadership standpoint, it used to be that you could be a specialist in one thing, or, you know, you could go to school for this amount of time and get this knowledge and you were set for a while. And that is not the case at all.
Yeah, those days are gone.
Either you're a learner or you have a short shelf life.
Yeah.
Let's move on to our second question. You just mentioned sort of the breadth of team that you can learn from. You've got the older, wiser, and the younger, inexperienced, all of whom can speak into it. You currently do not serve on any particular team, but you did lead the Catalyst team for quite a while. Do you have a main point of emphasis in your leadership right now, just in the consulting that you do, in sort of a personal growth leading yourself? What is that point of emphasis?
Specifically as it relates to a team.
Well, specifically as it relates to leadership. I mean, you are currently in a unique spot because you're not leading a team,
right?
But you're helping organizations' leaderships. You did lead a team. So,
yeah.
And you obviously, people need to be leading themselves. So just point of emphasis of leadership in your life, I guess.
Well, I think that the greatest currency is authenticity currently. And if you're leading a team, or if you're leading a tribe, or if you're a thought leader, or if you have, whether you have 10 people or thousands that are following you or watching you or you're interacting with on a daily basis, to me, authenticity is by far the most important trait, characteristic, essential at this point in the landscape of leadership.
So authenticity is a buzzword. Gets thrown around quite a bit. It's one of those words that's used so often. It doesn't have a specific meaning. What do you mean when you say it?
Well, I think there's several pieces to authenticity. Honesty would be one, mm-hmm. which we know what honesty is. Vulnerability would be another piece of authenticity. Transparency would be a piece of authenticity. I think the idea of allowing your self-awareness as a leader to be number one on your to-do list. And so many of us, I've heard Patrick Lencioni several times talk about, you know, the old days of never let him see you sweat. That used to be really important. You know, you don't show your weaknesses. You don't reveal things that you struggle with. You're making sure that if you're standing in front of someone, figuratively or literally, that your armpits, if they're stained up, you hide that. Today's
put that jacket on.
Yeah, exactly. Today's landscape, it would be just the opposite. You sort of walk in and you hold your arms out and you point at your pits and go, "Guys, look, check that out.
I'm so nervous right now."
And the point of that is that
has the pendulum swung maybe too far that direction?
Well,
discernment?
The point is this, that your team. Mm-hmm. Who are around you all the time. Now, this is not true for a tribe or if you're speaking to thousands, but your team, they know you're sweating. Mm-hmm. They realize your pits are stained out because they're around you. They understand the things that you understand about yourself but aren't willing to admit. So part of the way you show power and that you reveal your ability to lead them well is that you know the you that they know. And that's really, really strategic today. So it's not as much about that I'm vomiting all my weaknesses, mm-hmm. and I'm showing up and going, "Guys, here's the 10 things that I'm awful at, or here's the 10 things that I really struggle with." You might need to do that. It's more saying I'm aware equally, if not more, of the things that you're aware of in my life as part of my team. Mm-hmm. and you're willing to walk in and say to your team, "Hey, you just need, I need you to understand that I'm off the chart on self-awareness." And this is, I mean, if you look at the political landscape, politically, like, we're not, you guys are like doing hand signals. What's going on here? You're doing
I was going to say, I just gave him the steel sign. You're not allowed to know that.
Politically, if you watch, one of the things that I think political candidates would score so well, if there was just an ounce of self-awareness and authenticity and a little bit of transparency in the way that they approached how they influence people.
That is an interesting point, because I think you are right in one perspective, but I think you mentioned earlier, if you're talking to thousands of people, authenticity looks very different. Those guys would get eaten alive. That's like bleeding in shark-infested waters. If you, as a, if you are a public person like that and you show authenticity, you are inviting people to devour you.
And that's why it's a risk.
Well, and it's why leadership is not very easy, amongst many other reasons.
Well, think about, I mean, you know, election cycles, how they work, presidential elections. And I remember, you know, Bob Dole, like after the election, everybody thought, oh, man, this guy's so cool, because they saw who he was. And it's like, man, how, like, had they seen
that side of him?
That side of him. Because the pushback on him was, he's just an old robot dude.
Right. Remember Mitt Romney? And I'm not taking any sides politically, unless you guys want to jump in and take sides and let's
motivate about neutral that. Is really good.
Neutral is really good. That's on great. Politics. But remember when the documentary about Mitt Romney came out after the election happened? Yeah. And everybody who watched that documentary, myself included, thought, this is a pretty cool guy. Like, I would like to hang out with him based on this documentary because of why? Because I was seeing who he really is. Mm-hmm. Now, the documentary could have been, you know, portraying something different, but it felt like it was telling the truth about his world. And the closer we get to truth as a leader, the more we move towards true and away from fake, that's always going to make us have way more influence and impact on our team.
I think that's definitely true in an organ. Yeah, in a team context, an organizational context. I think the broader reach you get, I don't think it's less true, because truth always needs to be at the forefront. But how it's presented, that just becomes an enormous challenge.
So maybe we should have a candidate for next year's election that we drum up, and the whole campaign promises that we're gonna be authentic.
Well, didn't Ross Perot try that?
A little bit, I guess.
Well, it didn't work.
I just tried to do my Ross Perot impersonation there. A little bit.
I wanted to talk about Romney fighting Holyfield. I mean,
yeah, what's going on?
That's probably going to be more authentic than Pacquiao. And
if that's Mayweather. An authentic fight, Mitt Romney will not be nearly as interesting for very much longer.
Well, and even if you watch, you know, a lot of us who are listening or a part of this conversation here, myself included, watch a lot of SportsCenter. We watch a ton of SportsCenter. I've just looked at Barnabas is like,
I watch a lot of SportsCenter. Todd doesn't know.
You know nothing about sports.
I know nothing about.
So do you know
sports
what SportsCenter is? It's the ESPN flagship.
I'm aware.
So if you watch SportsCenter, though, you'll notice that a lot of the angles they use today for the camera angles will be scenes and shots that you don't necessarily expect.
Right, it's not just the stereotypical studio shot. The news desk shot.
And what I think the felt need that you're capturing with that kind of TV angle or that kind of camera angle is, I want to see what's really going on. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see the fake version. I don't want to see the fake plant. I don't want to see the fake news desk.
I mean, they even do it to the point where, like, Merrill Hodge takes his coat off and that really sweet tie knot that he has, you realize just how ridiculous it is because he's tied it so much that his tie only goes down to, like,
exactly
his navel.
Yeah.
But that's okay because that is how he is authentically wearing his tie.
Yeah, I want to know what these people are like
normally.
And I want to see what it's really like on the set of SportsCenter versus show me the facade. And this is true in culture. You know, we're moving more towards that idea of authenticity, true, honest, real, vulnerable, transparent.
What obstacles are you currently facing in leadership, either organizationally again or personally?
A lot of obstacles for me. This, you know, one of the things that I think all leaders struggle with is what are you known for? What's sort of your calling card? Mm-hmm. You know, what's on your business card? What is the thing that you get invited to things because of? And so for me personally, there's a struggle currently of I'm not necessarily stewarding anything. Whereas Catalyst was a 10-year journey, and I was getting to be the person that was running that. And that, from an identity perspective, that felt really important. You know, like I got invited to things, and I got to be the Catalyst guy. When I decided to move on from leading Catalyst, there was a very real sense of that little small voice in the back of your head saying, well, now what are you going to be? Now who are you going to be known for?
You took off that team's uniform, hung it up, and walked away. It's kind of, I mean, you now don't have a uniform that people look at you and go, oh, he's with
exactly so-and-so. Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, there's a lot of leaders today that this is becoming more and more of a reality for, because so many leaders today are free agents. You know, they're operating in an environment where they're on multiple teams, or they're not on any team necessarily. And this is going to be true more and more going forward. But for me personally, it's been both a struggle as well as, I think, a newfound reality of identity in Christ, and that you have to be really comfortable and confident in, man, I don't need something on a business card to give me a sense of identity and a sense of being known. And so that's been a really big one.
I mean, I honestly, you know, struggle daily with not being on staff at a church. I mean, if somebody asked me what my identity is, I still self-identify as an executive pastor all the time. All the time. And so I think for me, that's, and with a specific church, you know, that I was with for 10 years. And man, it just, you're like, wow. I mean, you know, I am the director of leadership at Lifeway, and that's great. But who I am and, you know, what my heart is for the church. And, you know, I was just talking with Eric Geiger, who's one of the VPs here, 2 days ago, and saying, hey, you know, if there is not a week that goes by that you don't long for the church, like you don't long to go be with the church, work at the church, then you probably shouldn't be here.
Hmm. That's specific to our organization.
It is.
Because we,
it is.
Lifeway exists to serve churches. So if you have to have a passion for the church at some level, especially at that leadership where you're thinking strategically, how do we partner with and serve as many churches as possible?
It's a strange tension.
Yeah. Well, but that business ministry tension is an unusual space to live in.
As an XP, you live there all the time.
Right.
Yeah, I think another, a lot of people will resonate with this one, at least if you're somewhat ambitious as a leader. And whether you're in your 20s or 30s or 40s, at any point in your journey of leadership, you always want to move to the next level versus operating in the current level at the highest capacity you can. And again, for me, that's been one of those things that has been both a blessing and a curse, in the sense that I was always striving for whatever the next rung on the ladder was that I could achieve. And, you know, my advice to leaders today is, man, be incredibly ambitious in pursuing what God has called you to do, but make sure you're not outside of the lane that He's calling you to run in presently. And this is so true if you're 30 and you're, you know, a middle manager somewhere, or you're a youth pastor, or you're, you know, a senior manager in a 500-person company. Don't worry about trying to climb the ladder as much as focusing on what you're being called to do today. And if you're great at what you're called to do today, then that all of that will happen naturally. But a lot of us tend to, we start thinking about what's next, and we forget about what's now. And your boss is basically saying, just do your job well. Like, if you would just do your job well, achievement, advancement, the next level, the highest levels of things you want to strive for will take care of themselves. And that's one thing that, looking back, I would say has been, again, not a mistake, but it's just been one of those things.
Like a learning
that,
process.
Yeah, I've learned that over time is the best way to advance is to do what you've been called to today really well.
Well, you know, you were just talking about this. That's a pretty personal answer because you're talking about distinctly about yourself. The next question is more of a personal question, and that is, what does leadership look like in your home? You're single. You don't have any kids.
Single and ready to mingle. Hello.
Hello, ladies.
All the single ladies out there. Can we start something that would rival eHarmony here on the Five Questions podcast? I thought maybe starting B-Harmony.
Todd will just take a one-pager business proposal and run with it.
So I love one-pagers. One thing they know is when I come in there, one of the things I'm going to ask for is a one-pager.
If you had to list, Barnabas and Todd, the number of single men between the ages of 35 and 45 that you would put at the top of the list of the single men most eligible bachelors between 35 and 45, would I be on that list? I would, wouldn't I? Or do you have other people that are friends of yours that
35 to 45?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be on that list.
I didn't want to make it like all single Christian men because I don't think I'd make the top 10 list. There's plenty of young Christian men that I can't compete with. But between 35 and 45, I feel like I've got a pretty good shot.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah? Okay.
So is that the greatest obstacle you're facing right now? Back to our question.
No, yes. The greatest opportunity, that's a much better way to put it.
Well, those two things can be the same. Yes.
The greatest opportunity currently would be for me to find a wife that could be a partner in life.
Okay, how has this not happened?
No, that's a great question. I'm sorry. I've been asked this question many times.
I'm sure you have, because I've known you for a while.
Yeah.
You're a cool guy. You're fun to hang out with.
Yeah, keep going. Keep going.
You're a guy.
Right.
Like,
I'm a guy's guy.
You're a guy's guy. You know, all these things.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe you need to be a little bit more sensitive.
Guy? Yeah.
Yeah. More of a girl's. Maybe that's the problem.
I like to shoot guns, as Todd can attest to.
But not at humans.
No. Only at animals. You know, I think for me, my story is just so unique in the sense that I was very ambitious. And so I kept sort of putting it off of, I'll do that at some point in my life. And then you get into your 30s and you go, wait, man, I kind of missed the window. And then you get into your mid-30s and you're going, okay, I need to like focus on this now. And then you get in your late 30s. It's more difficult. So I'm not sure to answer your question other than the right person hasn't come along. But I do want to say this about the practical side of leading at home there's something for me that I'm able to elevate my game with other people's families, friends, and people who are close in my life without having a family of my own. And this was another lesson that I learned from the sabbatical and stepping out of Catalyst. Part of that was that God was reminding me that you've been given a stewardship of these people in your life, and currently you don't have a family. So you're just as responsible to impact those families and people mm-hmm. around you as you would be to impact your own family. So a lot of people who are singles, they sort of use the excuse of, well, I don't have a family, so I don't have to really worry about investing in relationships and kids. And I would say, no, just the opposite. Like, people you're close to, you should be investing equally
as much.
You can
be somebody's older brother.
You got it.
Somebody's cousin.
You may not be a blood uncle to, you know, that child, but mm-hmm. you can be a friend uncle to them. And speak into their life and add value to them just as much as you would your own brother's son or brother's daughter.
Well, and I would say that we all needed that. Everybody needs somebody that is either their parents' age or a little older, a little younger, that, you know.
And we all relate better to people outside absolutely. The family. I mean, if you have older brothers like I do, having somebody who would be like an older brother but is not as annoying as your actual older brothers would be somebody you'd actually listen to.
Same thing with your friend's parents.
Yeah.
Many times you'll listen to their advice.
They're way cooler than your own parents.
Way sooner than you would your own parents. Yeah.
Well, actually, I think this is a good way to talk about our last question, and that is you've been, you know, pretty reflective up to this point, but what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
I love this question. I use this one constantly anytime I'm interviewing somebody because I think it's so helpful.
You may have been the one who suggested this question for this podcast. So at the, we certainly don't want to take credit for something if you planted the seed.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate your attention and intention towards lack of plagiarism.
And that was also very authentic, I'd like to point out.
Amen. So here's what I would say to my 20-something self, is I would say your 20s should be focused on building a foundation for your 70s. And this is sort of my mantra anywhere, anytime I'm speaking to 20-something, is establish who you want to be at the end of the race, now at the start. And if you start well, you'll finish well. And there was a mentor of mine that told me that many, many moons ago. Your 20s establish your 70s. Your 20s establish your 70s. So start with the end in mind. And when you're 20, you many times aren't thinking about legacy. You're not thinking about the end of the race. But I would say start with that as your posture of where you want to end up. That's big picture. Practically, it looks like this. It looks like use your 20s to build a foundation. So when you think foundation, you think deep roots. And so for me, like I'm not sure I would do a lot different than what I did in my 20s. But when my 20s was done, I spent five of my years in my 20s working on a ranch in Colorado riding horses at a place called Lost Valley. Now, did that help me in what I'm doing today? On paper, not at all. Like, what is wearing Wranglers and cowboy boots and, you know, a tacky Western shirt and taking guests out in the Rocky Mountains?
On the plus side, tacky Western shirts are back in.
Well, they are back in. So, I have a whole closet full of those things.
And there's some ladies out there that like the whole cowboy thing.
Well, you know what? Maybe I should start rocking the old Western shirts.
You should. And the Wranglers.
And the tacky Western hat. I have a few of those laying around.
I don't know about that.
Leave the hat out? Yeah. Maybe go with the baseball cap.
Yeah, that's good.
But there was 5 years that when I look back, it was incredibly foundational because what I was doing was I was spending those years learning a work theology of, man, work your guts out. Like, be willing to work hard and not worry about the credit. You know, be willing to serve people. Be willing to sacrifice. Be willing to scoop thousands and hundreds of thousands of shovels of manure that create an environment for guests to come into where they'll experience something that's...
I feel like we need to pause for just a moment because there are going to be listeners who think that their job is all day long shoveling.
They do that anyway?
You know what? No, Brad literally did that.
No, I literally shoveled manure. Hundreds of thousands of scoopfuls of manure. With 150 horses.
And it did teach you something, and it did help you lead to somewhere. So for those of you who think your job is actually that, somebody else's job is actually that, and it can take you somewhere.
Anyway, that's exactly
back to you,
right.
Brad.
No, that was important for me to establish that work theology. And I established, you know, who I wanted to be spiritually. And I established who I wanted to be, you know, from a friend perspective. So I would have never, if you would have asked me when I was 15, though, hey, if you have a chance to work on a guest ranch for 5 years during your 20s, what do you think about that? I would have said, oh, that's getting in the way of me being on the Senate floor, because I was that kid in high school that, you know, everybody was annoyed by because you wanted to be on the Senate floor by the time you were 25, or at least working as an intern, you know, or a staffer with some senator. So be content with where God places you in your 20s, because that's just foundational. The practical side of that.
But contentment with the end of the road in mind.
No question.
The trajectory in mind.
Yeah. And if you don't have it all figured out, I mean, this is a whole other conversation, but calling, we're putting way too much pressure on 20-somethings today to change the world by the time they're 29.
Right.
Because of the Zuckerberg effect. All of a sudden, if you're not, that's why so many 20-somethings are living at home in their parents' basement, in their underwear, eating Cheetos.
Because it's all or nothing.
Because it's all or nothing.
They've chosen nothing, or they haven't found the all.
Right. And, you know, it's like, no, go get a job.
Yeah.
Like, build some foundation that you can stand on and build on for the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years of your life. You don't have to have it all figured out. So that's another piece I would tell myself is foundation. You don't have to all figure it out. Be content with where you are and build build some deep, deep roots.
Well, that is good advice, and I think is a great place to wrap this thing up. So thanks a ton for being on. It was a lot of fun.
Well, you know, the inaugural voyage here on the Five Questions podcast with Todd and Barnabas was quite the adventure, I must say.
Was it an authentic adventure?
It really was. And I just appreciate the fact that you guys are a voice for our generation. Can I say that? Can I say that you're a voice for our generation?
You're
both younger than I am. You're both younger than I am, but you are officially, because of the fact that you're doing this podcast, you have a voice into the leadership landscape of what's going on with our generation. So thanks.
Thank you, Brad. I'm going to put that on my business card because nobody looks at those. Well, that was this week's episode of the Five Leadership Questions podcast. We'd love it if you jump on iTunes and leave us a rating and review so that other leaders like yourselves can find it, hopefully get some benefit out of it. Thanks for listening and tune in next time. Thank you for listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and register for a free online demo. For participating, you will get a 30-day free trial. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.